Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to The Reluctant Historian. This is the podcast where I try to show my husband that history is actually cool. I'm your host, Liz Lawson, and this is our Reluctant Historian.
Dakota Lawson.
On this podcast.
Hold on. I just feel like I squeaked at the end there.
You did a little bit.
I was like, oh man, puberty finally hit me.
I was just trying to ignore it for you.
Yeah, then you kind of laughed a little bit. I'm like, oh, I feel like I should address this so the audience is like, is she married to like a 14-year-old?
No.
Anyways, keep going.
Yeah. So on this podcast, I'll tell him a story from history and he'll share his unapologetic thoughts and opinions. So if you love history,
or you absolutely hate it,
this podcast is for you. All right, Dakota. So on today's first shorty summer episode.
Hold on. I've been preparing a song for this that I didn't write. Hey, shorty, it's your birthday. You gonna party like it's your birthday. Do you remember when people sing that song?
I do, yeah.
Right back in the mid-2000s?
I do remember that, yes.
Okay, what is our first shorty summer?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the TRC and land acknowledgements.
Okay.
These are very Canadian things. Well, land acknowledgements less very Canadian, but the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, I'm familiar because we do land recognition each week.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do, right? Mm-hmm. So, but TRC didn't really ring a bell. But okay, sounds good. I'm intrigued.
Okay. So sit down, buckle up, and get ready to listen to the history of the TRC and land acknowledgements. We'd like to begin by recognizing that we are recording on Treaty 6 territory and the homeland of the Métis Nation. We make this acknowledgement in recognition that we are settlers here on the land that belongs to the many different First Nations of Canada. Okay, so Dakota, we premiered a new segment last week called
New Nudes.
Not nudes. News.
Oh. Oh, that's less fun.
New news. So I am bringing us a topical news piece today, and then next week you'll bring one, and then I'll bring one the week after, and so on and so forth until summer's over.
It'll be like a competition who can bring the, you know,
best
bring
nudes?
The heat. You know, mine's probably going to be some fucked up shit, so get ready for that.
Can't wait. Yeah, so my news for this week is how Western Canada is under a heat dome, not a heat wave, and how BC is on fire.
In a dome. That's what they're calling it, is a heat dome?
Yeah, so I didn't read up on that, but I think what they mean is that, like, that the heat can't get out, so it's, like, in a dome, rather than a heat wave. So, like, the heat just keeps, like, repeating itself over and over and, like, making itself hotter, I think is what they mean by the idea of a heat dome. So we've got, like, a lid of hotness over the area.
Interesting. I feel like we're in the Simpsons movie where that dome got put over them. Do you remember?
I do remember.
And they
remember
had
that.
To change business names to Dome Depot and stuff like that.
Yeah, except we're in a heat dome. So,
yeah
I was doing a bit of reading about how this is like a record breaking, unprecedented heat wave.
Well, as people love to say in this pandemic times, we're living through unprecedented times.
Yes.
I fucking hate what people say.
I know you do. That's why I specifically
yeah,
said that.
Thank you.
But I have read that. Since 2000, 18 of the 20 hottest years have been between 2000 and 2020. So there's only been like 2 years that were hotter that didn't happen before the year 2000.
Really?
Yes. So our world's on fire.
Yeah.
It's
just dying.
We're all gonna burn to death.
We're all gonna burn to death. Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, the heat, like what's happening in BC, I mean, with people, like how many people died because of the heat?
So the most recent number I saw was 796 because of the heat wave.
That's way more than I thought. That's crazy.
Yes. So people just dying because it's too hot. The fires. So Lytton, BC, for 3 days in a row held the record for the hottest place in Canada. And then on the fourth day, it burned to the ground.
Fuck. How hot was it there? Do you know?
I feel like it was around 50.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
has it ever got that hot here?
No, that's what it. In Saskatchewan?
Yeah.
No, so that actually broke all records in Canada. Really?
Holy crap.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what 50 feels like.
No.
I know it's like we've been at 40 and it's like only 10 more, but it's like 40 is like unbearably hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can't imagine 50.
Yeah, I don't think I've felt 50 degrees. I remember landing in Abu Dhabi, which is in the Middle East, at about 6 a.m. and it was 42 degrees.
Oh yeah,
but that's a dry heat, like it's a desert, so
different.
Yeah, so you're not like oppressively walking into a wall of hot.
But even it is definitely different. But I know, like, even yesterday, or no, at the garage sale that we had the other day, it was like just like you walked outside and you're like, oh, that's just a wall of heat hitting
me. Yeah, and that was only 38.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, the scientists are saying that we should prepare to have more summers like this, mm-hmm. where it's hotter sooner, right? Like,
yeah.
Our heat waves don't usually hit us until end of July, beginning of August, and this is beginning of June, or end of June, sorry. So we're going to have longer, hotter, drier summers. So, you know, I think about climate refugees, right? They're saying that with the oceans rising, we're going to displace about 7 million people. Now, that number could be, it is different depending on what source you read, but people who live on the coast.
Yeah.
And there's going to be about 7 million or more refugees that are going to have nowhere to live because their world, their whole life is underwater. Like Miami will be underwater. And so the one article that I was reading said best case scenario, Miami's still underwater.
And do they have any like time frame for when that's actually going to happen?
By 21. What, I don't know how to say that.
We're in 21.
No, we're in 2021, but in 21. So 2100. How would you say that?
2100.
Yeah, 2100.
Okay,
so like 80 years from now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that the same place for like California as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen to Hollywood?
Maybe it's going to move to Saskatchewan.
Oh, I was thinking Utah, but sure, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, when so, you know, the tropics are going to be 50% hotter, they're thinking.
50% hotter.
I know.
They're already like, so at that point, it's going to be like, should we go to Mexico? Or wherever, it's like, no, that's way too fucking hot.
Yeah, we can just
let's go to balmy Saskatchewan.
Yeah, it's really wild to think about.
We're gonna be a destination for people. Oh, it's only 40 degrees there. Let's go there.
Yeah, oh yeah, there, but
I don't know why they're talking like Canadians coming to us.
I don't know.
Yeah, but they're trying to fit in with us. Yeah, you know? They we gotta talk like them there, but.
Yeah. Yeah, so we were talking a little bit about it earlier today, and you asked, what do I think is going to happen to people?
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a species, we will survive. I think human beings are resilient. I think the rich people will have a better survival chance than the poor people. Mm-hmm. We've already seen a lot of that in terms of pandemics.
Now, we fit into middle class, so where are we at in this scenario?
I feel like we might be okay. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to us, because there are definitely more rich people, or not more rich people, there's more middle class people, but the rich people have way more money than we do, so who's to say? But I think as a species, we will survive.
Mm-hmm.
I think there could be an extreme decline in population if we're losing space to live, which also means we're going to lose farmland, we're going to have more droughts. Saskatchewan is a drought province. We are prone to droughts, and we're going to see more of those. Or some people think that we're going to have better farming land. I don't know.
Those are very just two opposites.
I know. It really depends on who you talk to.
Well, I mean, I feel like with every conversation, there's always like people that are going to be on one side or the other. It's like climate change exists. climate change is a myth. Like, it's like there's that, there's always those polar opposites that it's like,
I know,
one of them exists and the other is fabrication.
Yeah, I think the story is more everybody agrees that it exists. Mm-hmm. However, what is the cause of it? And so,
right,
like, conservatives, although I could be wrong, conservatives just voted to say that it doesn't exist, I think. I don't know. Or that it wasn't caused by humans. But, like,
yeah.
Often, and there is some truth to that. I don't subscribe to that whole belief that humans mm-hmm. aren't causing this climate change, but
right.
there is some truth to that, right? Like, our world has continually gone through warming and cooling periods, right? We've had ice ages. We've had times where the Thames would freeze over. The Thames in London. So, like, in the 1600s, it's a river. It's the name of the river. The River Thames.
Why the fuck would I know that? Why didn't you just say, the river's in London?
Just one river.
I haven't
the big
been
river.
There, dear. I didn't fucking live in jolly old London like you.
Well, I lived in Leicester, but thank you.
Anyways, rivers. Rivers in London.
Yes, so this river, the main river in London, the River Thames, would freeze over in the winter, which is not common now. Doesn't happen now. So what I'm trying to say is that, yes, the world has always gone through heating and cooling periods. However, this period of heating has been ramped up and gone way quicker because of human actions.
We're the worst.
Absolutely. We're like little parasites.
That's how Earth's I like, see fuck. That's how I see myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's your golden nugget?
So my golden nugget is I've been playing through the handheld Zelda games. And I was on a boss that took me probably about 20 tries, and I was so fucking mad last night. I wanted to throw my DS, but I didn't because I'm a controlled and easygoing adult. But I wanted to break something. But I finally beat it this morning.
I know,
and it was so gratifying
you were so
to be
happy.
Able to beat it. I don't know how kids beat that game though. It's the last boss in that was like impossibly hard.
Maybe kids are just better at games than you are.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like, especially like an older generation than me, they had to learn how to play these games. And like, meanwhile, I'm like, most games I play, I'm like, drop it down to easy. This didn't have an easy mode. This was it. I just had to go in and face it. And there is something to be said about facing that challenge and not having an option to go down to easy, because like some games I'll be like, oh, I can't beat this boss, drop it to easy. You don't get as much of a sense of accomplishment that way. It's fine, but this way I was forced to do it and I wanted to do it, and then I felt a really big sense of accomplishment when I actually achieved it. So
cool,
something to be said about no difficulty modes. Anyways, there's mine. What's yours?
So you alluded to it already, we had a garage sale last weekend. We had a garage sale.
On Friday.
It's
Sunday.
Yes. <So. laughs> We were going to do it Friday and Saturday in the plus 38 heat. We started early on Friday, and it was super, super successful, way more successful than I was expecting. And I made a bunch of money, and then I didn't have to have it on Saturday, and that was my golden nugget.
Yeah, I mean, you made nearly $400.
I did.
In just that day, and like people were, you priced everything really well. I was working, so, you know, I didn't get to be there for the most of the time, but you...
No. And then I did not share the money with you.
No, I told her, when I showed up after work at 2:30, and I was like, oh, like, you can go inside, I'll watch this. And she's like, no, because then I'd have to share the money with you. Just super fucking selfish.
Yes.
But we did just go to Superstore today, and you bought, with that money, you bought two lounge chairs, one for me. So,
you're lucky,
you know,
boy.
I feel like you're my sugar mama over
it's
here.
It's always true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, we've been doing this for a while. 24 weeks, actually.
This is episode 24?
Yes.
Wow.
And at the start of every episode, we do a land acknowledgement. And so today, I wanted to talk about what land acknowledgement is and why we do them.
Should have done this the first episode, if I'm being honest. Like, every week, they're like, they keep saying this, but what the fuck does it mean?
Yeah, well, it means exactly what it says it means. We live on land that belongs to indigenous people.
Well, there we go. There's your shorty. I guess we're done.
No. Okay, so I'm going to quote here from an author, an indigenous writer named Selena Mills, from the website locallove.ca, and I'll link that in the show notes so you can go read her words. But yeah, these are not my words. This is her speaking about why land acknowledgement is important. So according to Mills, land acknowledgements are an honest and historically accurate way to recognize the traditional First Nation, Métis, and or Inuit territories of a place. They can be presented verbally or visually. According to Anishinaabe Wanda Nanabush, the first curator of Indigenous art at the Art Gallery of Ontario, land acknowledgements have one goal, regardless of their format. They commemorate Indigenous peoples' principal kinship to the land, and the fact that they have not and cannot be erased from her, their collective First Mother. They're a starting place to change in how the land is seen and talked about, she says, and they help redefine how people place themselves in relation to First Peoples. Land acknowledgements were inspired by the 94 calls to actions that are contained in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, which is the TRC, and I'm going to talk about a little bit later. According to Mills, they are a necessary first step toward honoring the original occupants of a place. They also help Canadians recognize and respect Indigenous peoples' inherent kinship beliefs when it comes to the land, especially since those beliefs were restricted for so long. Part of the point in making land acknowledgements is to recognize how systemic and institutional systems of power have oppressed Indigenous people and how that oppression has historically influenced the way non-Indigenous people perceive and interact with Indigenous peoples. So, why do we here at The Reluctant Historian make land acknowledgements? So, we're not a big institution. We're not a system of power. We're just two people talking behind a podcast mic. However, that doesn't mean that we have not benefited from the systemic oppression of Indigenous peoples. Coda and I are both settlers on the land, even though our families have been here for at least four generations. But neither of us can claim the land as our own. And while we do feel a kinship to Canada, we also recognize that there have been too many horrors done in the name of Canada, and that by being white settlers, we have benefited from these atrocities.
Yeah, absolutely. White people are the worst.
So did you have any questions about that, Dakota?
No, it seems pretty straightforward. I like that we do it. I'm glad that you, when we started the podcast, that's something we've done since episode one, right? Mm-hmm. So I like that it's something that we include because it is important to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, we're just, this isn't our... It's like that song that Canadian, I think I made this joke to you recently, but that Canadian song, it was in middle school. The song was like, "This land is our land. This land is your land."
Yeah.
It should be, "This isn't your land. This isn't my land. We fucking stole it," or something like that. You know, but I feel like that might not has been that appealing to, you know, the fifth grade in me would have been like, huh? What? We fucking stole it.
Yeah, it would have been confusing, but we should be talking to children about that.
Absolutely. Just in a way that's not like, we fucking stole it.
No, maybe your song could be for like adults.
Yeah. But anyways, I really like that. I think it's really important that we, even a small thing like that, and just recognizing, you know, as us white people like to say, check our privilege. This is the welcome to the I Make Fun of White People podcast. White people, you need to step up. Do better.
Absolutely, yes. And I think one thing that you had said is that white people suck. I don't think that we need to feel guilt necessarily for the behavior of our ancestors.
Modern white people still suck.
Yes, but
I'm one of them.
Yeah, we do suck. It's true. Yeah, you won't let me say all men are trash. So, I mean...
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's a conversation for another day. I have to ponder more on that one.
Yes. But what I did want to say is that, yes, feeling uncomfortable about the way our ancestors lived and stole land from the Indigenous people is horrible, but just sitting in our guilt isn't really going to solve anything.
No,
I like
for
how
sure.
You said, like, it's time for us to step up and we need to be better.
It's about doing something and recognizing, even just recognizing, you know, what has happened and what's come before us, and just learning from that and doing better from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's always to me life is about constant growth and just continuing to do better every day. You're gonna stumble, and, you know, there's often times in our relationship where I've said something, you know, as you could tell by the listeners, by the things I say on this podcast, I say a lot more horrible shit in person. So I sometimes have said stuff that you're like, let's unpack your favorite phrase. Let's unpack that.
Yeah.
Which I just love when you say that.
I know.
And then we dive into it, and it makes me uncomfortable at first. But then oftentimes I'll think about it and come to, a more informed conclusion, I guess.
Yeah.
So.
You're just learning so much.
Yeah. I know.
Which is actually a really good segue into what I want to talk about next, which is the TRC, or also known as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, and the 94 calls to action that were contained in this report. So have you heard of the TRC before, Dakota?
I hadn't until right now.
Yeah. So the TRC was an opportunity for those who were directly or indirectly affected by the legacy of residential schools to tell their stories. It came about after the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement, which was the largest class action settlement in Canadian history, which took place in 2006 and stated essentially that those who were affected by residential schools deserve fair, comprehensive, and lasting resolution to the legacy of these residential schools. One of the agreements of this class action lawsuit was the establishment of the TRC in order to facilitate reconciliation among former students, their families, their communities, and all of Canadians, which you and I and listeners, we all fall under that umbrella. So between 2007 and 2015, the Canadian government provided $72 million to support the TRC's work. The TRC spent 6 years traveling to all parts of Canada and heard from more than 6,500 witnesses. The TRC also hosted 7 national events across Canada to engage the Canadian public, educate people about the history and legacy of the residential school system, and share and honor the experiences of former students and their families. The TRC also created a historical record of the residential school system. As part of this process, the Canadian government provided over 5 million records to the TRC. The National Center for Truth and Reconciliation at the University of Manitoba now houses all of the documents collected by the TRC. So this is important because it's giving a voice and like a written record. So yeah, there were oral records, but like this gives written records of what happened at the residential schools.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
In June 2015, the TRC held its closing event in Ottawa and presented the executive summary of the findings contained in its multi-volume final report, including those 94 calls to action to further reconciliation between Canadians and Indigenous peoples. In December of the same year, the TRC released its entire 6-volume final report, and all Canadians are encouraged to read the summary or the final report to learn more about the horrendous history of the residential schools and the lasting effects of trauma and the school's legacy. I've linked the reports in the show notes, so please make sure to read that, because as Canadians, we should be reading that anyways. It's part of our history, and it's really important for us to understand what happened in residential schools. And it also gives us a little bit of a starting point to understand why it is so horrific to find the bodies of the Indigenous children that have been found recently on the residential school property.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess, honestly, I didn't know a ton when it came to residential schools until this stuff came up about finding these unmarked graves, and then you and I had a conversation. You kind of told me, just hearing that, I was like, it's crazy to think even here in Saskatchewan that something like that occurred, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually had the longest, or not longest, we had the last school to close on the Gordon Punishai Reserve.
In like 94 or 96. 96, which is wild. That was the year my sister was born, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
And that's why it's like, well, one of the reasons why when people are like, it's in the past, get over it. It's like, no, it's not in the past. That was 25 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Messed up.
Yeah. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission's final report is a testament to the courage of each and every survivor and family member who shared their story. Remember that as they told the TRC what had happened to them, they were reliving the trauma that they had experienced in the residential schools. So these 94 calls to action, these are to help facilitate reconciliation. Reconciliation means like the repairing of relationships between individuals or groups of people. And so we're trying to repair this relationship that exists between Canadians and Indigenous people. And so some of these calls to action, I'm going to read them to you right now. And you guys, listeners, Dakota, me, we should be reading them anyways to know what we should be asking our government officials to be working on, to be doing ourselves even. So number 58, we call upon the Pope to issue an apology to the survivors, their families, and communities for the Roman Catholic Church's role in the spiritual, cultural, emotional, physical, and sexual abuse of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children in the Catholic-run residential schools. We call for that apology to be similar to the 2010 apology issued to the Irish victims of abuse and to occur within 1 year of the issuing of this report and to be delivered by the Pope in Canada. So that hasn't happened yet. And he's still, like, refusing to apologize.
Man. And just a few weeks ago, I talked about how the Pope was cool and said Pokemon was okay.
I know. I
take that back.
I'm really disappointed. I think, like, he did comment when the bodies were found in Kamloops.
Mm-hmm.
He said it was horrible and it was sad, but he never apologized. And I think that is awful. It needs to happen.
He needs to check himself.
He does. Number 62. We call upon the federal, provincial, and territorial governments in consultation and collaboration with survivors, Aboriginal peoples, and educators to make age-appropriate curriculum on residential schools, treaties, and Aboriginal peoples' historical and contemporary contributions to Canada, a mandatory education requirement for kindergarten to grade 12 students. So the Alberta curriculum, you might have heard, has like none of that. Like there's really no education at all.
Really?
About what this call is calling for.
Oh, wow.
I would say Saskatchewan's doing okay.
Are we? Okay.
Yeah. Number 73. We call upon the federal government to work with churches, Aboriginal communities, and former residential school students to establish and maintain an online registry of residential school cemeteries, including, where possible, plot maps showing the location of deceased residential school children. So that's kind of what's happening right now. They're trying to find the missing children.
Mm-hmm.
Number 93, we call upon the federal government in collaboration with the national Aboriginal organizations to revise the information kit for newcomers to Canada and its citizenship test to reflect a more inclusive history of the diverse Aboriginal peoples of Canada, including calls to information about the treaties and the history of residential schools. So I thought that was really interesting because what that tells me is that people, when they immigrate to Canada and become Canadian citizens, they don't actually have to have a knowledge of the Indigenous people. So that's really interesting to me. I teach a lot of newcomers. And the last one I want to talk about, number 87, we call upon all levels of government in collaboration with Aboriginal peoples, sports halls of fame, and other relevant organizations to provide public education that tells the national story of Aboriginal athletes in history. All right, so there are 89 other calls to action that, as Canadians, we should all read. Land acknowledgement, however, is not one of the 94 calls to action, but was inspired by the TRC. And so where are we at now with these calls to action? A website that I encourage everybody to look at is called Beyond 94 by the CBC, and it was created to monitor the progress of the 94 calls to action. The site provides up-to-date status reports on each call to action, as well as extensive summaries explaining those status reports. It includes in-depth features and short video documentaries that tell some of the community stories behind the calls to action. It also features residential school survivors sharing their experiences. So I checked out this website. It's super freaking cool.
Is it?
Yeah. And it's really easy to read and go through. So it's really interesting.
Are there games on it?
There's no games, sorry.
Aww.
But it tells us how many calls to action have been completed. So do you have a guess?
Neat.
Do you have a guess how many have been actually completed?
Probably not a lot, are there?
13.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so this came out, the TRC came out... And I know I just said it, and I should know this because I'm a history teacher, but it came out in 2016, so we've only completed 13 of these. So according to the website, 20 calls to action have not even been started.
Hmm.
37 are in progress with projects proposed. 24 are in progress with projects actually doing stuff, and 13 are complete. So when you go onto the website, each project is represented by a flame icon, and if you click on that specific flame, it relates to one of the calls to action, and then it pulls up everything that has been accomplished under that call to action. It fact checks everything for you, gives a report on the issue. For example, the site states that in July 2017, the province of Saskatchewan designated a residential school cemetery as a provincial heritage site.
Oh.
Quote, "This means the cemetery will be preserved and the burial sites protected, but it is not implementing all the requirements of Call to Action 76. So I liked it because it's like, okay, this is what's being done, but it doesn't actually fit that call to action. So anyways.
Interesting.
Yeah. So as Canadians, and especially settler Canadians, this history is so important for us to learn in order to understand our privilege and how we have benefited from the systemic oppression of Indigenous people. And then not just to listen and learn, but to also take action and help to dismantle the systems of oppression that still exist and to question those in power who do uphold those systems. One small way to take action right now is to donate to the Indian Residential School Survivors Society, and I've linked their website in the show notes if you'd like to make a donation. So, that's the shorty history of land acknowledgements and the TRC. We are not leaving this one open to a rating, as I don't think that's super respectful, but Dakota, what did you think?
I was trying to think of, like, because, like, this one, it wasn't, it was more of an informative, and I was going to give it a higher one, because I was like, super important.
But if you want to give it a 10 out of 10, that's fine.
I give this we can't actually count it in the official ratings, but I'll give this a 10. This land isn't my land. This land isn't your land.
We stole it.
Well, I was going to go with, so go fuck yourselves out of 10. So.
Perfect.
The best podcasts tell their listeners to go fuck themselves.
That's true.
Yes, I'm kidding, listeners. Don't do that.
Well, that's all we have for this week. We'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to hang out with us. If you enjoyed listening to what we had to say, please download our podcast from Apple, Spotify, or Google, or wherever you get your podcasts, leave a review, or tell your friends about us.
And if you want to stay in contact or see behind-the-scenes action, you can follow us on Instagram at The Reluctant Historian. Or if you want to shoot us an email with future show ideas or corrections you may have noted, you can email us at thereluctanthistorian@gmail.com.
So, that's all we have for this week. We'll see you next week? What do I say here?
Same time, same place. You say this every week.
I know, I always forget this line. So we'll see you next week. Same time, same place.
You had one job.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.